Jonathan Edward Neville. I'm going to get that mixed up a lot. Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. Another one of the major differences between Heartland and the Mesoamerican Book of Mormon geography theory is how Lehi got to America. Meso generally believes Lehi crossed the Pacific Ocean, while the Heartland experts think that Lehi crossed the Atlantic Ocean. Jonathan Edward Neville, I'm going to get that mixed up a lot, is going to be telling us more about why he thinks Lehi crossed the Atlantic Ocean. Check out our conversation. Well, one of the things I'd really like to do, because we talk about the Heartland, but we don't really dive into the details very well.
Okay.
Because
yeah.
I would really, one of the interesting things, because as I mentioned before, we've talked Baja. In fact, that was the first one we did
right here
on Gospel Tangents. We've talked to Mele. We haven't talked about South America, which I think is a fun theory too.
Yeah.
There's the African theory, which
yeah,
I think pretty much everybody says is a joke, but or not a joke.
Except not me.
Not you?
I think it's just as valid as Baja or Mele.
Really?
Oh yeah, totally.
Oh.
And it gets back to this issue. Once you take out the New York Camorra, you're taking out the Western Hemisphere, because the same people that said Western Hemisphere said New York Camorra. So once you eliminate that, it could be anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
And the African, you can look at the archaeology or at least the geography and make a case.
Well, yeah. So what I'd like to do is kind of talk, because here, I've got the book here. I need to get you to sign this, by the way.
Okay.
Between
sure.
These Hills, this is the one. I just read this over the last 2 days.
Okay.
Super fast in preparation for this. But one of the interesting things, I think there's probably only one, well, and even that's slightly disputed. But I think for most, almost every geography theory agrees, okay, Nephi and Lehi left Jerusalem. They traveled south, probably along the Frankincense Trail.
Right.
They took a left in, I want to say, Oman. And then there's...
At Nahum, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And then there's two... Oman is the
right.
Normal... Or, am I getting that right?
Yeah, there's three places in Oman that they think were land bountiful.
Right.
Right, near Salalah.
Yeah.
Salalah is a city there now.
And then, anyway, they took a left turn. They headed to the land bountiful. There's a couple of different harbors. Mm-hmm. I know George Potter has one. I've had him on. And then there's... I need to get the Ashtons on, too.
Yeah.
Because they have a different harbor in Yemen.
Yeah.
So then the question is, most of the... I will say... Mele and Baja and Meso,
mm-hmm,
all agree, most of them kind of think that they kind of hugged the coast of India,
right,
and went down by the Mele Peninsula, which is a really interesting thing for
yeah,
Mele people.
Yeah.
And then they had to shoot across the wide open ocean.
Right.
So they were doing pit stops all along the way, and then all of a sudden, well, we've got 3,000 miles of ocean or whatever
right,
it is, and we've got to just jet across here to either Baja yeah, or Meso.
Or Chile,
yeah.
Right.
Whereas you, which I thought yeah, was fascinatingly interesting, said, no, they didn't go across the Pacific at all.
Right.
They went around the Horn of Africa. So can you tell us
yeah,
more
sure,
about that?
So, yeah, sure.
Because to me, that's the first big, real big difference. So
that's definitely
that,
a big difference. Okay, and the rationale behind that, and I have a long discussion of it. I don't remember if it's in that book or not, but... The idea is that when they left the Oman area, Yemen-Oman border area, there's two monsoon seasons. And there's one where the winds blow, as I recall, north and east, and the other south and west.
Oh.
And when they said that they gathered, as I recall, man, it's been a while since I've looked at this, but as I recall, Nephi says he gathered fruits and honey before right, they left. And so if you look at Oman and the seasons when they would harvest fruits and honey, it's roughly in the fall, October, November time frame. At that time of the year, the monsoon's blowing south and west. So if they left after they collected honey and fruit, they would have said, because they went before the wind, they weren't powered ships, right? They would have had to go south and west, which takes them along the west coast of Africa, or the east coast of Africa, and around the tip of Africa and up. So, in fact,
but either way, whether they're going across the wide open Pacific Ocean or the wide open Atlantic Ocean, they've got a long
journey. No, they don't. Going across the Atlantic's a piece of cake.
Okay.
And here's why. In fact, I have a, if I could, should I run over there real quick and show you a little map of this?
Sure. Here, we'll take a, here, I'll pause for a second.
Okay.
All right, so go ahead and show us the map. Let me zoom out a little bit here.
Yeah, we might insert a bigger picture of this, but just to give you an idea of how it works.
I'll zoom in on the map.
Okay.
Okay.
So you have Oman and Yemen over here.
Okay.
And Lehi leaving on this red line down the east coast of Africa, and then around across the Atlantic over here to southeastern United States area, Caribbean.
Okay.
And then Mulek, I think everybody agrees, Mulek went through the Mediterranean and across the Atlantic about the same time period.
Okay.
Even John Sorensen agrees with that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Mulek had to cross that way, leaving from Israel. And we think, at least I think and others, that Lehi went south around Africa and then up here. And so there's scriptural reasons for that. One that I pointed out is, I think it's Isaiah 18, talks about the land effectively of Zion in the future would be beyond the waters of Ethiopia, which means it was past Africa. And I've done a long write-up of that. But the key is to understand these monsoons, because if the monsoons are blowing at the time they're harvesting fruits and honey, they have to go south and west. And so going around Africa, and then you go under past South Africa, and I've sailed along there. Well, I've been on a ship along that area. And once you get to the west coast of Africa, you can either follow the coast up to about the Canary Islands, which is where Christopher Columbus left to come over, which is probably where Mulek
Spain.
Part of Spain. But it's, well, Spain, the Canary Islands are way south of Spain. They're off the north coast of Africa.
Okay.
And so that's where Columbus sailed first, and he had to repair his ship and all that there. And that's a cool place. I've been there too, and it's amazing to see that whole place as a kind of a stationing point for transoceanic voyages. But anyway, so if Lehi went up the west coast of Africa to Canary Islands or just crossed the Atlantic, a lot of people don't know that this voyage has been replicated within the last two or three years by an ancient Phoenician ship. I don't know if you've heard about the Phoenicia, but
I read about it in your book.
Okay. So underwater archaeologists had uncovered this ship in the Mediterranean, and they dated it to about 600 BC, roughly. And so there had been an account, I think it was Herodotus in history, who said that they had circumnavigated Africa. And so they wanted to see if it was possible with this 600 BC ship. So they replicated it using the same wood, the same kind of joints, the same sails, everything as close as they could. And they set sail from, as I recall, they went through the Red Sea, but I'm not for sure where they left. But the point is, they went around the east coast of Africa, down the east coast, and then up the west coast of Africa. And they only had sails. And the currents were pushing them towards North America. And the trajectory would have taken them to the Caribbean, Florida area. But they were trying to prove circumnavigating Africa, so they kept trying to push back and back to go back to the Mediterranean, and they were finally successful in doing that. But they saw the trajectory where they would have gone if they had just let the currents take them. So then, within, I think it was 2 years ago, they used the same ship again to see if the Phoenicians could have gone to the New World. And that one left from Lebanon, and through the Mediterranean, and it crossed the Atlantic, like I showed on the map here, and landed in Florida. And it was a fairly easy voyage for them.
And now, is it the east coast of Florida or the west coast of Florida? Because in your book, you were saying the Panhandle.
Yeah, that's a good point. This ship landed in the Miami area.
Okay.
I mean, they could have gone to a variety of areas, because you can adjust your sails for the winds for different directions and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere in that area, if they had wanted to go to the Panhandle, they could have. The prevailing winds and currents kind of go around Cuba and then back up, so to get in the Gulf of Mexico. So depending on, of course, weather's variable. Who knows what happened when Lehi and Mulek came. But it certainly in this particular Phoenicia ship demonstrated both Lehi's route and Mulek's route as being not only feasible but actual using that 600 BC technology. So that was significant, but that came after I'd written these books. And so, but it makes sense because it fits with the winds and the currents, as I described. Some of the critics say, well, you can't get around the south tip of Africa, the weather's too hard, there's the Antarctic current colliding with the currents from the Indian Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, it's too treacherous. What does the Book of Mormon say? Remember, they encountered rough weather at one point, right? And it blew the ship backwards even. And that's what happens down there.
Hmm.
So that's consistent with what the Book of Mormon describes of the trip. So the question, though, is where would they have landed when they got to the New World? But it all makes, this is a voyage that we can fairly well justify from the scriptures, both the Bible and the Book of Mormon, but also from actual extrinsic scientific evidence where it's been replicated with that technology. As far as I know, nobody's crossed the Pacific in a 600 BC ship, you know. And you have the horse latitudes and all those issues that trying to cross that's difficult. Certainly the Polynesians did it, but that was over centuries. It wasn't, you know, one voyage. By the way, when I was in Australia once in Brisbane at the temple, the guy heard that I had an American accent. And he said, so do you know Lehi landed here on his way to America?
In Australia. Oh, I had not heard that
and
one.
And I said, I didn't know that one. And he goes, it's right here in chapter, it's in Elm, I can't remember which chapter, but it says, talks about Gdanya as one of the military leaders. Gdanya is an Australian term, you know, Gdanya.
Oh, okay.
So that was his little joke.
Okay.
But I think he was serious too, you know. So then I said, well, have you heard about the Heartland? But anyway, so, you know, Australia is another candidate if you want to look at it this way. But seriously, I think if once you remove the New York Camorra, the whole world's a candidate.
Well, that's kind of what Ralph Olson said before he died was, hey, you know, it could happen anywhere on the earth.
Yeah.
So,
and that's why I think it's so important that the prophets told us it was in New York. Because otherwise we're like a rudderless ship just floating out in the ocean, who knows what. But when you have, and I call it the key or pinpoint, point in the map, Camorra. Once you know that Camorra is in New York, it isn't just a geography issue. It's interpreting the entire Book of Mormon.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Heartland expert Jonathan Neville. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about snow, specifically the lack of mention in it in the Book of Mormon. Is that a problem?
But to me, it's a total red herring to talk about this, the snow thing, because it applies just as much to the New Testament. So, I mean, how do you argue against a red herring? You just have to say, well, what is your premise that if they didn't talk about snow, they didn't experience snow?
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents for just $5 a month. Patreon is spelled patreon.com/gospeltangents. If you'd like to watch the entire video, you can subscribe at YouTube, Patreon, or on my website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button for just $8 a month. PDF transcripts are just $10 a month, and you can get those on patreon.com/gospeltangents or on my website. I'll send those to you as soon as I've finished completing it. If you'd like to get a paperback and PDF, just subscribe for $20 a month at either Patreon or on my website. Individual paperbacks are available at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents interview, and you can find all of our past interviews there. Show your Gospel Tangents pride by purchasing a t-shirt on our website at gospeltangents.com/shop. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. You can get our latest updates by friending me at Facebook, or you can also follow our page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Become an insider and you can see the newest videos. Follow us on Twitter at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.